We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Great to be with you. Thank you for tuning in. Interesting times all around us. I just got off the phone, actually, with somebody who was talking about this FISA bill, the reauthorization of FISA. Nobody really understands it. I think most of us wonder exactly why we have to give this kind of what feels like sweeping authority to the government, especially to law enforcement. This is a moment where the distrust then verify reality, the reality that we cannot trust our government. Therefore, we have to distrust them to start and then verify. It feels like that's what we're living with. And I don't know how these members of Congress are going to justify reauthorizing this FISA stuff to the voter. But I guess they're going to try to force it through. So we shall see. But a lot going on, a lot happening. An interesting guest today. We will talk in a few moments with Katie Gorka. She's got a new book on, she calls it Next Gen Marxism. And what's going on, which is interesting. Very persuasive lady, very capable, a longtime national security leader, and also worked in a high level at Heritage Foundation. We'll also talk with Dr. Donna Van Natten, who has a book on how body language and can tell you a lot about people, especially candidates. Very, very interesting book, and very interesting lady. We'll talk with her in a few moments. But first, let me see if I can set this up for you. I want to hit on this because I've seen it very closely. Many of you know and have heard me talk about the Polish think tank slash law firm called Ordo Iuris. Ordo Iuris is based in Poland, founded in Poland, headquartered in Warsaw. And it is a kind of half a law firm and half a think tank, meaning that half of what they do is actually in the legal system, litigate to protect families and pro-life positions and conservative positions. Should be clear, Ordo Iuris is conservative, very Christian conservative. And half of what they do is that litigation, actually in court and in the regulatory world, as well as advising on legislation. And the other half, it's kind of a think tank, thinking bigly, thinking in a large way, broadly about what's going on. They have a document that they released, Ordo Iuris did, about a month or two ago on sovereignty. And the fact is that there's a major sovereignty grab going on in Europe by the European Union. And so they wrote this lengthy analysis. They do a lot of reports, analyses, and one of the things that has happened in Poland in the last year, less than a year, really, is that the government has switched from a conservative government to a more liberal government. More specifically, from a very pro-Polish sovereignty, Poland first mentality and somewhat conservative to a very globalist, pro-EU and therefore liberal on a lot of issues, government. That's the guy, Donald Tusk, who actually was one of the top leaders of the European Union formally, you know, in a formal way. And now is the prime minister in Poland. He's gone about challenging almost every position that the Polish people have wanted and accepted, in my opinion. You could say he won the election, but I think that was after almost a decade of the conservative, more conservative party in power. I think the Polish people just wanted a change, and they were perhaps fooled into thinking this would work. But here's where Ordo Iuris is interesting, and another aspect of what they do. There has been a coming together of the pro-life movement and the conservative Ordo Iuris organization to sort of fit together. And so not just litigating pro-life cases, protecting pro-life health professionals, not only those kinds of things, but also now leading the public expressions, the public identification of the issues of pro-life, especially with pro-life marches across Poland, which is what's happening in the last couple of days. Pretty extraordinary. And here's what I have to tell you. The it is true. One observation is this. The Polish leadership, the Polish conservative movement is now up against the prime minister, the ruling party. And it is often true, not always, but often true, that it is easier to make the contrast clear when you're the opposition party. If you talk to some conservatives, they'll say there was nothing better than the days of Barack Obama and what he was doing, because people, the conservatives, could be the opposition party or the opposition voice and get lots of attention, raise lots of money. So Ordo Juris has stepped up into this and said, look, we're going to be, for lots of reasons that has to do with their own history. They are a group that has never taken government money. In the European experience, in the European nations, there is a great tradition of nonprofits getting money from the government. And if you, you know, if you're a favored one, you get lots. If you're an unfavored, you get less. But it's kind of what everybody does. And so when the political party, when the political winds shift, you may be left out with not much there. That's what happened to a lot of groups, not to Ordo Juris. So back to Ordo Juris, what, the reality here. They got one part of it that they're the opposition, but two, they actually have these coalitions anyway. So there's not just two parties. There are at least three or four or five, depending on what nation you're talking about. In Poland, five or six that have little slices. There are two major parties, but then there are little slices around. And you can influence the party structure and the positions of the party in some ways more easily, if less effectively. What do I mean by that? Well, you can get some of the smaller parties to say, hey, we're going to be more pro-life. We're going to have these positions, but they may not have an impact. They may only hold a few seats in the parliament. They may not have as big an impact as a situation where the two major parties in, say, America. So a lot is happening. Here's what I want to let you know, and what you need to know is the movement that is happening across the world, and we're feeling and seeing it in America, is happening in other places. Last weekend, there was an election in Poland, the local elections, meaning like county level and state rep level elections. And the more conservative party, PIS, won a narrow victory over the more liberal party. Now, what does that mean? Well, it part of the analysis is that the cities went for the more liberal party, and the rural and the country went for the more conservative party. That sounds a little bit like America, where you have the blue cities, and then you have the red states or the red counties or the red places. But here's what you need to know. All across the world, when you look at the numbers, the growing force is what I would call center right, meaning populist conservatives on the right. Now, the media will call them far right and extremists and all that. It's not true. It's people that are saying what they feel is a disconnection from who's in power, that the powerful are either corrupt or just out of touch or both. And you see this happening in places like Germany, where the more conservative parties are ascendant. You see it in Italy, where the more conservative parties are ascendant. The real canary in the coal mine in the next year or two will be what happens in France, where the polling looks like the more conservative parties, more than one, have gained. But we'll see. That's just the polling early on. That's not the election. But certainly it's more and more. And I would say this. I believe that the reason for all of this is that the centralization of power is less effective than ever because of the ability of the people to get information. Meaning, if you can't know what's happening in Washington, D.C. or Brussels because there is no way to communicate, then you can't know. But if you can know, and if it's relatively low cost, you're going to be upset with what you're seeing. That's what's happening, which brings me to the real reason that you're seeing changes in so-called censorship or managing information. It's because what has become clear is that the centralizing authorities, whether in Brussels, in Washington, D.C., in Berlin, in Warsaw, whether they're more local, you know, like a capital of a nation, like I just mentioned, or these multinational entities, the centralization of power is not working as well as they expect it and they want it. And therefore, they have to try to choke off what they think is stopping it, which is the information flow. Because you can't get away with stupid stuff at the European Union in Brussels like you used to. It's known too fast. You can't get away with what's happening in the swamp. It's known too fast. So you better shut down the way it's known. Shut down the way people get the information, the channels of communication. And that's what you're seeing, whether it's in Brazil, whether it's in America, whether it's in Europe, the move to censor and stop the free flow of information, because the information in this case is power to stand up to the centralizing bureaucrats. That's what you need to know. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Don't forget to go to proamericareport.com and sign up there. Be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. A great guest upcoming who joins me. Really very interested in her efforts. Katie Gorka, Catherine Cornell Gorka, I should say. I was looking at your full bio, Katie. Many people know her as Katie Gorka, especially if you follow the Trump administration. She served at the highest levels of the Trump administration. And recently she was elected the chairman of the Fairfax County Republican Party on a platform of competing everywhere, whether it's a blue county or not. And she has a book we're going to talk about, too. So first of all, welcome to the program. Thank you for coming on. And maybe tell us why, you're not a kid. I mean that as a compliment. You're someone who's, again, been experienced in business, in politics, in government service at the most senior level. And now you're down into the fray of running a county party. That's kind of interesting. Tell us why and welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, honestly, after all my years of working in national security, I finally came to the conclusion that the problems that we're facing today are not going to be solved in Washington. We've got to fix this at the community level. So I left my job at the Heritage Foundation, which I loved, by the way. But I left there in July 22 to do two things. I wanted to write this book with my colleague Mike Gonzalez, Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It, because we felt that we needed an explanation for the American people on how we got to where we are today and how to fight back. So I spent my time working on that. But then I also decided I needed to get involved in my local politics. So I started, you know, little by little, became an election officer, that kind of thing. And eventually, just this past Saturday, as you mentioned, I became the chair of the Fairfax GOP. We cannot give up our counties and our communities to the radical left.
It's so true. By the way, and let me set up. I'm sorry, I jumped into it. The book we're talking about is Next Gen Marxism. It's from Encounter Books. They do a lot of great books, and it's the subtitle is What Is It and How to Combat It. Catherine Cornell Gorka is our guest talking about it. And you mentioned, and it's important for people to hear that your background is not only in politics at all. It's in national security. Just recently served at the Heritage Foundation as the director for civil society, and has worked in the Department of Homeland Security, again, at the highest levels. To the book, you said you thought you needed to explain to the public, to the country, what next-gen Marxism is and how it's impacting us. A lot of people talking about that term, Marxism, not next-gen, is kind of unique. Is it primarily these the dramatic stuff we see, the universities going crazy, the media going crazy, or, you know, I know the answer partly because I've looked at the book. I haven't read all of it yet, but, it's more than that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's all these movements that are telling us that we are fundamentally racist. It's the movements that are pushing transgender ideology into our schools. It's the movement pushing pornographic books into our children's schools. You know, these are all aspects of the new Marxism. And yeah, Mike and I came up with the term next gen Marxism because we felt that we needed to distinguish it from, you know, it's not classical old fashioned Soviet Marxism by any means. It's not even really the cultural Marxism of Antonio Gramsci. Although it's been very much shaped by that. But this is this new thing that I would say really emerged in 1989 with the formation of the group that kind of put together critical race theory. That came out of a conference in 1989. And that was really the beginnings, you know, where they said we need to basically fundamentally change the system. We need to kind of get rid of the America that we know. And we're going to look at sort of people being in fundamental conflict with each other, irreconcilable conflict over issues around race, ethnicity, and sexual orientation.
Our guest again is Catherine Cornell Gorka. Often you may hear her, see her on social media. Katie Gorka, as a lot of people know her, again, a national security expert. We're talking about her book, Next Gen Marxism, along with Mike Gonzalez. I should say that too, the co-author. You know, the subtitle, What It Is and How to Combat It. How to Combat It. A lot of people, a lot of good people. You and I know them. We have friends in common and overlapping in church communities and all. They just they're tired of the energy that, you know, gets spewed all over. Like they you know, it's exhausting to them in terms of if you're for Trump, people will tell you how crazy that is. If you're against Trump, people will tell you how crazy that is. It feels like, and it could be social media. It could be the moment we're in. But it feels like a lot of us are saying, I'm just going to let this pass.
I would challenge that. You know, I'm okay. Just coming off this really interesting election, running for the chair of the Fairfax GOP. I was blown away by the energy that I saw, the excitement, the enthusiasm. You know, I think a lot of Americans actually see, they know how serious this is. They really get it. You know, they may not be able to give you the, you know, the nuts and bolts of how we evolved from Lenin to Gramsci to Marcuse to what we see today, right? But they know that what's happening today is fundamentally un-American. They want to be in the fight. I can't tell you, you know, how many people just kept saying to me, this is great. We're ready to fight. We're ready to take back Fairfax County. We're fed up. We've had enough. So I think the American people are really at a key moment.
Well, let me ask you the question a different way a little bit, maybe, that people look up and they say, I don't think anything's going to get solved by who I elect. In other words, you know, you maybe get a better president and someone who will take on some of this, but the people in Congress are not going to step up. And there's going to be governors who seem to get co-opted. And I guess one of the points here is that combating this is not only about either national or federal elections. It's local, but it's also about taking on, standing up to the cultural shift, right? I mean, that's a big part of arming yourself with what the truth is so you can be talking about this. It's not just elect Trump, it'll be great. Well, that won't solve it only. I mean, got to do it to stop what's going on. There's a lot more there.
Oh, yes. And that's exactly why I left my job working in the national arena, because we were having so many problems here in Fairfax County. I mean, our newest head of the school board said his oath with his hand on books that included Genderqueer and Lawn Boy. You know, it's. And the only thing that's going to stop that, right, is people coming together and fighting it and standing up to it. And we're not doing enough of it yet, but it's starting and we need more of it.
Well, first of all, thank you for coming on, and thank you for running for we were talking offline about being a chair of various parties and levels. I've done some myself. It's not, by definition, when you start that job, half the people love you, half the people aren't sure, and you never really do much better. It's kind of you have to be the leader, which is part of being a leader. And Catherine Cornell Gorka, again, the book is Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It. Encounter Books, our friends over there, they do a lot of great books. You can get it anywhere you buy books. Thank you for being out there. Thanks for the book. We'll have you back again, and we certainly look forward to as I watched you run for Fairfax County, and you talked about how we're not accepting the ceiling they tell us of the number of votes. Like in California, we have great conservative eagle leaders, and they say, look, maybe we can't win California yet, but we've got millions and millions of conservatives. They need to get connected and get contributing and finding ways to impact things. So good for you for doing that in Fairfax County and in a blue county. I think it's a really smart thing. So congratulations.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. We'll have you again very soon. Thank you. Again, Catherine Cornell Gorka, and I will post links to her book and to all the rest that's out there from her work. I've got to get a link to one of the stories covering her election. And we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We just were having a nice conversation, as so often happens. Our next guest is Dr. Donna Van Natten, and she is a researcher. She's the head of an organization, a president and CEO of Accountability Measures. And she's very, very interesting background. And we were talking off the air about her expertise in looking at the science behind nonverbal communications. It's not just, oh, you know, I'm really persuasive. I like to, you know, I can make you feel good. But there's a science to it. The Body Language of Politics is also her book. Decide Who is Lying, Who is Sincere, and How You'll Vote. Dr. Donna Van Natten, welcome to the program. How are you?
Great, Ed. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to a conversation today.
Well, first, do people believe you? Meaning, I remember when I was a kid, my mother, you'll smile, gave me, this is an Irish mother, he gave me a set of tapes, audio cassettes called How to Deal with Difficult People. And a lot of the tapes were about how to pick up what the nonverbal clues around. And I was probably 15 or 16. So I've never doubted. But do a lot of people, you know, say to themselves, oh, no, I can explain it well, I can communicate. And they have no idea that most of what's going on is nonverbal.
I think most people pick up on it because we even pick up on as, you know, babies and toddlers before we have a verbal language. You know, we pick up on the cues. And so we're very, as a human, we're very sensitive to them. So, and we actually, if somebody says something and their body says something else, we default to what the body says as the truth teller, more so than the verbal words, because, you know, rhetoric is just that, but body is much harder to conceal as it's, you know, bleeding the truth.
Again, Dr. Donna Van Natten is our guest, and her book is The Body Language of Politics. It's our friends at Skyhorse Publishing that are publishing her book. Yes. So here's what I wanted to say, though. What happens in a world where people don't even talk? I used to tell people radio was a purer communication because I couldn't make you smile by my smile. I couldn't use my body language or my hands or anything. I had to explain it to you. And I thought that was a wonderfully pure thing. But people don't even communicate by phone now. They text. they communicate by social media. How does that impact? I mean, because it's everything. It feels to me like everything is a matter of practice. If you are a social person, or let's say you intentionally go and learn how to be a social person, you go and learn, you start to pick up the cues, just like when you, the first time you swing a baseball bat, you don't hit the ball very well. But after you do it 100 times, 1,000 times, 15,000, you start to have it doesn't mean you're great at it yet, but you know how to do it better. If you don't have any experience of nonverbal cues, except watching TV or watching, Instagram, are we going to have even more people that don't understand what's really going on?
So let me unpack that real quick. So as far as radio, absolutely. Even though I'm not seeing you, I can pick up on things basically on your tone of voice, how loud you talk, how fast you talk, the ums and ahs in between, how fast that latency space in between me talking and you talking. So there's a lot of other elements other than this, the literally the words, you know, and if, right. And Mehrabian's work that says basically the 7-38-55 rule of, you know, 7% verbal, 38% tone of voice, 55% body. That's pretty much with held to stand, you know, over time, at least, you know, 60, 70 years of his research. And it's always tested. So when it comes to radio, absolutely, we can pick up on things, even though we can't see the body. We also can hear smacking of the lips. We can hear shifting in the body. We can hear background noises like typing right. or there's other people. So lots to be picked up there beyond the words. And as far as our social media, that's taken over everything. If you think about how quickly people swipe when they're looking at a picture, 2 or 3 seconds, they're picking up a lot of information, you know, before they go right. next. And they're not listening to the words. They're looking at images, whether they're stills or little videos, and they're taking it all in to get that feel, looking at the face, the positioning of the body in relationship to somebody else, you know, camera angles, just like at a political debate. You know, that's
right.
All of those external elements are huge, you know, color, placement on the stage, the podium, you know, the list goes on. And it has really nothing to do with, like, it's the best candidate. Oh, that's right, the best
right. Well, my wife, I often quote my wife. She says, it's just a popularity contest of some kind, you know, but you know, all these major races. Dr. Donna Van Natten is our guest. Her book is The Body Language of Politics: Decide Who is Lying, Who is Sincere, and How You'll Vote. Skyhorse Publishers is our friends that are publishing this. When you take the two big names right now, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, I would say this. Now, I'm not unbiased, right? I have a preference. I make it pretty clear. I think Trump was a better president and lots of reasons on issues. But I would say this when it comes to the personality type. To me, Joe Biden lies like a politician, which is to say he's lying all the time, just like all politicians. I'm not surprised by it. I do think it's crazy when people think he is sincere and not lying. And I would say Trump lies like a salesman, like something very different than the politicians. And I know I'm probably in favor of one over the other, but one is directionally true. The other one is just counting on you being dumb, which I think is what Biden expects us to not ever think or believe he's lying to us. How do you contrast the two? And you don't have to have a preference either. I wonder what your reaction is.
Well, you know, studying the research, this is a particular, let's call it a business or profession where it's okay to lie. We expect a certain amount of lying and rhetoric from everybody. It's the right. nature of this particular business. So there's a lot of forgiveness there. I think, so do both, you know, four candidates, four front runners right now? Absolutely. You know, but get in line. Everybody else does too. So I'm right. not picking one side over the other because I think they both have fascinating nonverbals, tone of voice. I think a lot of times and there are elements that we look for, you know, when it comes to what our president should look like, from size to weight to gender to, you know, facial looks, right. how they dress, you know, how they present. And, you know, anytime we deviate from those, whether you're small in stature like Buttigieg, you know, or, you know, sexual orientation or skin tone or glasses or age, let alone gender, all of those become hot topics that have really nothing to do with the political experience required of the job. So
right.
if you're part of our in-group, and we call that the in-group, if I pick you, then you get a lot of forgiveness. You know, just think back in school. If you're in my gang and you're in my club, then, you know, you might mess up or something, but you're still mine, kind of thing. And the same holds true politically. So if somebody wants to have somebody in their in-group, they usually can, you know, justify away a faux pas. Whereas the other yeah. side, the out-group, is like, oh, look at that. And honestly, it could have been the very same behavior.
Dr. Donna Van Natten is our guest. Her book is The Body Language of Politics. For 1 second, just to focus on Trump, the story that you might have heard, and if you haven't, you won't be surprised. Trump was on Meet the Press, and Chuck Todd was recounting how after he was done with his segment on Meet the Press, Donald Trump went into the control room and asked them to play it back with the sound off because he didn't care what was said. He was watching how it looked. And Chuck Todd said disparagingly, you know, this guy's so arrogant, he cares how he looks. You know, that kind of insight, I tell people, if you're at the highest level of politics, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, any of these guys, These are big league ball players. This is like pretending that the guy playing third base for the worst team in the major leagues is not the best player we've ever seen. These are people that understand how this works. How does it play out when both of these candidates are experiencing fairly dramatically the question of age? Because Joe Biden looks so dramatically different. Now, I think Trump has actually gotten thinner and tanner, and he's probably beating some of that back, but it's still a question. How does that fit into that, the way people relate? Do they give it a break because, well, that's my grandfather-looking guy. I don't care if he's shuffling. That's what you should do, and I'm not going to judge that. Or does it impact more than you think?
I think particularly on our younger voters that are coming up, they are not fans of the senior age. You know, overall, that with, you know, millions and millions of potential candidates in our country, is this the best we can do of somebody, you know, of this age, you know, because it may relate to their grandparent and they may feel like they're in my in group. So you get a little bit of leeway, but it still doesn't go unnoticed for sure. You know, in the sense of like age. I mean, just like when you think about Kennedy and Nixon on stage and all the dramatic, you know, first televised and the sweating and the placement. And I will say, I'm not surprised that Donald Trump asked to see that, because one thing that I think he does well, and of course, I have pros and cons about every single person in the political realm, of course, you know, when they're on TV or in photos, is he, because he is a larger human, he will lean over and he will give it away, if you will, to whoever he's working with, whether it was another political leader in the world. He has large hands where he places those. So I think he is very aware of that, whether they're up or they're crossed in his lap, or, you know, kind of the handshake of put her there and or roll the palm back over. So I think he has, just like on the debate with Hillary Clinton last time, you know, he was very aware of the looming in the background. And she was aware of it as well. You know, so
there's very, very, very experienced. Well, unfortunately, Dr. Donna Van Natten, I'm out of time. The book is The Body Language of Politics. Decide Who is Lying, Who is Sincere, and How You Vote. Thank you again, Skyhorse Publishing. Thank you for coming on. We talked off the air. We'll have you back again. I think it's a really interesting topic, and I'll look for an opportunity. So thank you very much, Dr. Donna.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
All right. We'll take a break, everybody, and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily broadcast delivering a conservative pro-family perspective since 1983. As an author, speaker, and the founder of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Mrs. Schlafly spent an astounding 70 years in public service, protecting and defending the Constitution, the unborn, and America's sovereignty. Following that legacy, here's the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
During the recent Texas border standoff, a lot was happening. In Texas, Texas Land Commissioner Dr. Dawn Buckingham published an article that called on all Americans to stand up for our country. Politicians should put the interests of Americans in their hearts and send a loud and clear message to leaders in a far-off capital in Washington, D.C. Keep your hands off the Texas National Guard. Meanwhile, the Oklahoma GOP rebuked its U.S. Senator James Lankford for caving to the D.C. Uniparty on a bill that would grant new authority to President Biden after Biden had opened our southern border for these 3 years. Lankford and Democrats hid the details, but enough of it leaked for House Speaker Mike Johnson to declare the useless border bill to be dead on arrival in the House. Biden promised that he would close part of the border if given new authority by Congress. But he already had that power, and he refused to enforce existing immigration laws. Giving Biden new authority over the border is like giving an alcoholic the keys to a liquor cabinet. Even Elon Musk piped in during this debacle with his remarkably pointed criticism of Joe Biden's open border policies. No law needs to be passed, Musk said. All that is needed is an executive order. Biden subsequently sued Texas for its newly enacted SB 4, which authorized state officials to arrest and deport illegal aliens found in the state. The U.S. Border Patrol should have already been doing this, but instead Biden and his minions tried to block Texas from protecting its residents. Texas has stood strong while Biden and the federal government have spent years sitting by and doing nothing about the border crisis. At a certain point, doing nothing is a choice. And that choice is for open borders. And in light of this, the state of Texas deserves our full support in all that they are doing to stop the invasion on their borders.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report with Ed Martin, president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. What's the latest on building the wall to protect our southern border? To the liberal media, it's a joke. But the crisis of illegal aliens is no laughing matter. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, we're asking serious questions regarding what to build, who's paying for it, and how best to deploy our military. Go to PhyllisSchlafly.com and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height stepping into the booth here at the end of the show real quick for Mr. Ed Martin. Going to wrap it up today. And I just wanted to bring to you a couple of final thoughts, a little bit of a local affair here in Missouri. But I think that there is a lesson that all of us can take from this, particularly as grassroots conservatives in 2024. Let this be a good lesson to learn from. However, before we get there, let me remind you, go to proamericareport.com. That's where you're going to find Ed's Substack. And of course, go over to phyllisschlafly.com. phyllisschlafly.com will give you the all important sign up for the Wink email, what you need to know. And of course, you're also going to get the show archives there. But let's wrap up the show together here today. And I tell you what, we have an incredibly amazing thing here in America in our representative republic, right? You and I get to go and make decisions at the ballot box, but not just that. You and I then get to go and be lobbyists to our elected representatives. So let us remind ourselves, this is accessible to us, this incredible privilege to go and lobby, directly lobby the folks that we put into office, the people we put there. And sometimes it is not just going and getting something horribly bad or someone who behaves horribly badly to change. Sometimes it is admonishing our friends. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that often, just like our wonderful leader, our late leader, Phyllis Schlafly, would always say, we always forget and we can't, but we always seem to. Don't forget to praise the good guys when they do something good. That's almost more important than chastising the bad guys and getting them back on course. But there is something today that I feel like we need to remember in an era of such political division, and rightly so, because our left and right, our socialists and conservatives or freedom people, whatever you want to call it, the divide has never been bigger between these two political perspectives before because of just how far the Marxist left has gone and just how much the right, the conservatives, have had to respond to try to maintain freedom and liberty and the constitutional order of America. But in the midst of that, we have to remember that when we disagree with something, sometimes it's our friends. Sometimes it's an oversight. Sometimes it's something that wasn't even thought of. So we have to have a healthy relationship. We have to have a healthy way of course correcting people in a positive manner, course correcting people who are our friends and not on the other side. Here's an example of that. We're talking a lot this week here in Missouri about SB 727, Senate Bill 727. Its sponsor, Senator Andrew Koenig, is a great guy. He has been a rock solid conservative, a rock star for all kinds of freedom things, educational freedom, for pro-life, for family, for all sorts of incredible things here in the middle of a pretty deep red state. And I know that we got folks all across the country, big hub in San Diego here at our Salem station. This also goes out all over in podcast form and a few other things here and there. But here in Missouri, we have good people. And often, if there is a bad bill that comes through, it can be addressed with a discussion amongst friends. And that's what's happening right now, because Senator Andrew Koenig is the sponsor of Bill 727. It's a huge bill, has tons to do. It's an education bill, has tons to do in several different areas. There's a lot of really good stuff in it. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in it. There's a lot of constructive things that are being offered by different nonprofits like the Show Me Institute. But sometimes there's oversights. One thing, it's being called a drafting error. One of the issues with this bill is there is a new, it seems, definition applied to homeschool families, homeschool facilities, which, of course, you know, doesn't operate out of some sort of formal structure in the sense of a building. It's out of your home. Well, there's a section of this bill that seems to potentially define homeschool as a school, which comes with some interesting implications. Now, people are making arguments to the contrary that, oh, that's not the case. But I mean, guess what? If you do, in fact, broadly define school to the point where homeschool is included, then all of a sudden, you know, carrying a loaded firearm onto a school property, that's a felony. Well, guess what? What if your homeschool family that happens to own a firearm? What's going to happen here? So something like this comes up, and it's from a good place, and it's got a lot of good things in it, and it's from a good source, from a good senator. There is a time for us to reach out and course correct. It's an incredible opportunity that we have. It's incredibly important. Now, it's happening with this bill. Sure enough, there are a lot of homeschool groups. There are a lot of Second Amendment groups who are standing up and saying, hey, we have a question about this, and they're getting answers back. And a lot of people are finding those answers unsatisfactory, so they're talking about it. This isn't a bill that's been passed. It's an incredible window into not just the big left and right discussion that we're always stuck in the middle of here. It's an incredible opportunity to see how we tinker with things inside our representative republic. Let it be a really neat lesson. Go take a look at some of the stuff surrounding this. This is a great lesson in how politics works. And we get out of the big shouting match between the left and the right and the extreme polar opposites. And we get down into the nitty gritty of it. And then you and I as citizens get to participate in it. It's just super cool. I feel so encouraged when I see stuff like this because I am reminded this is how it's supposed to work. These kinds of civil discussions and questions and changes and constructive criticism. It's really neat. And this is also an opportunity for you to take a look at an education bill and then go into your state legislature and see what people are doing there and to see how you can potentially question, strengthen, shoot down, make known your voice in these matters. So go and take a look. SB 727. It is an exercise in our representative republic happening right here in Missouri. Really neat to see up close and a very good reminder of the incredible opportunities and blessings that we have here in the United States of America. So that's it for us today. Thank you for being a part of the Pro America Report. Thank you for being with us through this wonderful week. Thank you to Ed for hosting the show. I'm starting to feel like a co-host. You see that? I'm taking ownership after all these fill-ins. Thank you to Ed for hosting and leading the show, to Mason, my co-producer, for doing such a good job keeping the details on track with me, and thank you to you for listening. We appreciate you all, and we will see you back here next week on another edition of the Pro America Report.